Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer, and I'm the director of Northwestern University's Infrastructure Technology Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Tom Herman.
The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. I wanted to share with people that are listening today some work that we've just finished that looks at the state of travel data in the United States. The reason we care about travel data is we make a lot of decisions about transportation, about investments in particular facilities from the point of view of government, about strategic programs like the high-speed rail program that the administration has been talking about for a number of years. We put resources into the air transportation system, direct resources really that come from user fees and user taxes. Same with the highway system. We make maintenance decisions and new investment decisions and operating decisions. The private sector makes a lot of decisions, too, to build new facilities, rail terminals, intermodal terminals where we move freight back and forth, investments that the airlines make. And to some degree, all these decisions are or really ought to be driven by data. That is, they ought to reflect what is the condition of the system, the performance of the transportation system, and how people use that system, what will be, what's the future, the near-term future going to look like, and what we might call what-if questions. What if we make this investment or this decision, how will the system perform? And the study we just finished was a study that evaluated the state of national travel data, really data that's mostly public sector, mostly government collected, but an awful lot of data now are collected by private sector, and they end up getting merged, and we bring all those together to make decisions. And to the extent that the data programs aren't well supported and don't produce quality data, we don't have a good basis for making decisions. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the state of data and the need for data. One could look at it and say, this is a really dull topic and it's really very unimportant. But at the same time, if you step back, I think you have to realize how important it is that our policymakers, our elected and appointed officials have the best information to make the most sensible choices that are going to affect us.
So in the broadest stroke, the report's just been completed. How good is the data?
The state of travel data in the United States is pretty sorry, particularly if you compare the connection between travel and transportation and economic development and international competitiveness. That is, we really want to maintain a very good and very efficient transportation infrastructure. To do that, we need to be informed about what the state of it is and what the needs and problems are and what the opportunities are. And having a weak and outdated database is a problem. And the short history is that we really haven't spent very much money collecting travel data over the last 15 or 20 years in the United States.
It just sounds, when you describe all the different kinds of transportation that you're talking about, including trucking, to look nationally at all the data that's available and analyze how good it is seems like a massive undertaking.
It is a massive undertaking, but it turns out that it's like a lot of other problems. You don't solve everything in one step. So historically, we collect data under different programs. You need to go different places to collect different kinds of data. So we monitor the flows on the highway network with a lot of automated equipment that data flow in and are aggregated by the federal government and actually used to allocate highway funds. So that makes the collection of those data particularly important. But also we use them to monitor the state of the economy because the more heavily the highways are used, we would measure that in terms of vehicle miles of travel. The stronger the economy is, those phenomena track very closely together. It's hard to collect the data, and it's gotten a lot harder because people in the United States and around the world today are much more concerned about privacy, are much less willing to answer questions about their travel. But in the absence of that information, we really don't know how the system is being used, and we're not in a strong position to make sensible decisions about investments in it.
How did the report come to be? Who initiated it?
It was actually originated by an organization called the Transportation Research Board, which is a part of the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and the Institute of Medicine. It's a nonprofit, independent organization that was literally organized, not the Transportation Research Board, but the National Academies, organized by an act of Congress signed by Abraham Lincoln. So it's a very old organization, and one of its primary missions was and is to provide advice to government. Mostly not, if you will, gratuitous advice, but advice when government says, we have a problem, can you help us answer this problem? So this study arose from this group called the Transportation Research Board, which is a voluntary collection of professionals, of 10 or 12,000 professionals around the country who are deeply enmeshed in the field of transportation. And it was supported to a significant degree by the federal government, which realized, the Department of Transportation, realized that the state of travel data was not what it should be, and they were looking for objective advice.
And if I understand correctly, you were the chairman of the committee that did the research that included 12 others, and it went
Correct.
For 18 months?
It was about an 18-month study. I had the opportunity to chair the committee. It was a very impressive committee of people who literally spent their careers working with transportation and travel data, a mixture of academics, people in private business, and not people from the federal government, but people who had been in government. So, for example, one of the members of the committee was the number two person in U.S. Census. Others were the absolute top people in the field of transportation data, people who work with the data and people who make their living with the data.
And when you organize a 12-person national committee like that, do you ever all get together in person, or was it all done by telephone?
We mostly meet in person, but not very many times. So this is a committee, and this is fairly typical for this organization doing this kind of study. We met four times. And three of the four times, we literally held a hearing. A public hearing was open to the public, but we heard first from people who are major users of these data in government and academia and private sector, people who are producers of the data, who run the data programs, so we can understand that, and another meeting with people who are kind of on the state of the art of new ideas about data collection and data analysis. And finally, a fourth meeting to pull it all together. So we had really strong staff support, a professional that works for the Transportation Research Board, whose name is Nan Humphrey, who's very experienced at doing these kinds of studies, but not an expert on this particular subject. And she was the energy behind the study that pulled the work of this really strong group of people together to an integrated final report.
What were some of the most surprising or interesting things that you found that you didn't know 18 months ago when you began?
Well, it's in part, every member of the committee knew an awful lot about what was going on because these are people that spend their careers in this area, and I'm among them. What I wasn't fully aware of, for example, is the connection between what are our contemporary policy issues and the state of the data. So there's been a strong push from the administration to advocate in favor of investments in high-speed rail. That really focuses on the intercity passenger travel market. So we need to know something about that market to make those decisions. The longer distance intercity market is dominated by air travel. Intermediate travel is and short range travel dominated by the automobile. And there is some rail travel. The rail travel is right now fairly a small fraction of national intercity passenger travel data. We have really good data on air passenger travel because the vestiges of what was formerly a strong regulatory process in the aviation industry have kept a flow, a sample of passenger itineraries, not identifications of passengers, but just the trip itineraries from one origin airport to one destination airport, including intermediate stops. Those data are available. They're actually publicly available. All these data are publicly available, and they're very thorough. We have no data on intercity highway travel, passenger travel. We have essentially no data on in the bus market. And Amtrak operates as a quasi-private corporation, quasi-public, quasi-private, and Amtrak doesn't release its travel data for planning purposes. So if you look at the intercity market, the dominant mode remains the automobile, and we don't have data on it. The most recent data we have on intercity passenger travel, aside from air, was collected in 1995. It's a relatively small sample. So those data are 16 years old. Well, 16 years in the life of data is a very long time. The market changes immensely over that period of time.
How would you collect intercity highway travel information without people fearing that you were infringing on their privacy or spying on them?
People do fear that we're infringing on their privacy and spying on them, and that's one of the really interesting challenges associated with collecting data. That is, we really need to know if we're going to understand the markets and plan to serve those markets, where people begin their trips and where they end their trips. And we also need to know the characteristics like the purpose of travel, because people travel very differently for recreational purposes than for business. So when I travel from here to Washington, D.C. for business, I'm going to fly. If I'm going to take my family from here to Washington, D.C. as a tourist, I might consider driving. I might consider taking the train. Time is a little less important, and the process of the journey is part of the value. So I need to know a lot of details in order to plan and in order in particular to forecast, to answer the if-then questions. How do I get that data? I need to talk to people. I need to interview people. And in order to get people to respond, people need to trust the data collector. And if the data collector is ultimately the government, they need to trust the government. And there have been some really interesting studies that show us that the willingness of people to respond to questions of the type that we want to get travel data has declined. And to some degree, it's associated with decline in the trust of government. It becomes a serious problem. And the problem becomes worse when you consider that something like 25% of the households in the United States are totally wireless. That is, they're totally dependent on cell phones. And the nature of pricing of cell phones is such that we typically don't do survey research by calling people on cell phones because the call receiver is paying for the call. So we simply don't do that kind of survey. And that's another barrier. The third barrier is, this is, I think, particularly interesting from a social perspective, the people who travel the most are the people most likely not to be home when you call them. So getting the data it's expensive and it's difficult, but the consequences of not having any data are to make decisions on the basis of emotion or ideology without the support of facts.
When you finished naming the barriers to collecting that data, I wondered if it amounted to the impossibility of collecting it. Do you think it's possible to get the kind of data that would be necessary to make wise decisions?
I think it's not particularly easy, but it's possible. It's just you have to realize data is an asset. Data is, or data are, a resource, and it costs money to get that. It costs money to get information, which is the product of data. So it's difficult. You may have to sample a lot of people to get a relatively small amount of data. You have to convince people that there's a legitimate reason for doing this. And you have to use creative strategies. So increasingly, as internet accessibility goes up, we're looking at the possibility of collecting data on the internet. And there, the problem is bias, that if there's a group of people that have little or no access to the internet, it's likely to be the lowest income people. And we really don't want to leave them out of the survey. So you might imagine collecting data from some groups by telephone and other groups using the internet. The internet has tremendous promise going forward, because if you've ever done any kind of surveys on the internet, it allows you to start filling out a survey questionnaire and then go out for dinner and come back and finish doing it later. So it actually increases the response rate if you can get people's attention. The question is getting the right unbiased sample. And that's a huge problem.
And you mentioned that data is a resource like other resources, and that resources cost money. And in this environment where the government is looking to cut costs wherever it can, and it's easy for politicians to make different things a whipping boy and say, why are we wasting money on this? How would you respond to someone who was saying, we can't afford to do what they might characterize as an esoteric study on how people travel?
It's not esoteric in the sense that I want my representatives to have the best data to make the best decision. When times are tough, it's reasonable to expect that there's pushback on investments in data programs, because if you have a choice of saying, well, I've got a bridge over here that's falling down, and you want money for data, I think I'm going to defer the data investment and I'm going to invest in the bridge. And that makes sense. However, when resources are tight, arguably, you want to make better decisions. The choices are harder to make and you want them to be better informed. So having better data is a real value. If I'm looking at not just one bridge, but two or three or four bridges that need to be repaired or need to be replaced, what data do I want to have? Well, I'd like to know the condition of the bridge, and that's relatively easy to get. We're pretty good shape on having that kind of data. I'd like to know what the utilization is, how many vehicles cross it every day. And we're not bad in that, because we can collect those data with continuous counts. I don't need to interview people. But I also want to know what's in the vehicle or what's in the box. I want to know how important that the use of that bridge is. So there are bridges, for example, in rural areas that may not get a lot of use, but they're extraordinarily important to protect the agricultural economy, because products move over those bridges on a seasonal basis. So having that kind of data, knowing not just the volumes, but the functionality, the uses of these systems, is really important. And that's going to help me decide in a situation where I have three bridges to fix that the number two is a lot more important than number one because of the functionality. So the need for data really goes up when times are tough. I just looked at some numbers last night, and the cost of the national data program that's recommended in the study that we did, which was less than $20 million a year, and that's really, it's chump change, it's peanuts. The cost of that is at the level, if you relate it to motor vehicle travel, surface travel, it's 1 cent for every 1,500 miles that people travel. So it's not very much.
And you had mentioned that it was largely funded by the government. Are they the recipient? Have you delivered it to them?
Yes, we are in the process. So one of the things that happens when we do studies like this is we go to the sponsors and we walk into their office and say, well, here's the report, and you can read the report, but let me tell you what's in the report. So we give them a briefing on that, and we're doing a series of those, and we're talking to congressional staff to try to bring them up to speed so that they understand what the recommendations are. So we produce a written product and webinars and personal briefings and small brochures for people who don't like to read long reports to try to get it out in a variety of ways. And we're also reaching out to the interest groups in the transportation community who look at expenditures like this and say, well, I want you to fix my road with that money, and we want to help them understand that having data is a way to make sure that the job that they want done gets done right.
So I know that the report is more detailed and that those presentations take longer, but what are the highlights?
The highlights is, I guess what we're learning to say is, here's what the connection is between jobs and economic development and competitiveness and making good decisions about the transportation system and not making mistakes in those decisions. That's one message. Another message is, yes, it looks like we have data. The wonder of the internet is you can go on the internet and seem to find anything you would want to find. But it turns out the data are very spotty. The samples are small so that you can't make statements about small areas. You can't make statements down to the level of congressional districts in some cases, which becomes a serious decision problem, and that data are out of date, and that there are efficient, economical, and effective ways to ensure that we have better data going forward. So we try to identify what the problems are, what the value of the system is as related to those problems, and how we can solve those problems with what amounts to a very small investment.
And are there specific uses that you can see the data being put to now that you're starting to get it into the hands of policymakers?
Well, we're not getting into the hands of policymakers. We're making recommendations about what data programs ought to look like. So we're not at that point. Remember, it's not that we have no data. It's that we have data, but what we have is not what we really need to manage the system effectively. So the changes that we're looking at are changes that are beyond data. That is, the changes that, in terms of the decisions that are made, the quality of the decisions are made, that resources go to the right places, that we fix the things that are broken before they become a problem. The data are very important from the point of view of strategic choices, but interestingly enough, they're very important from the point of view of very short-term tactical choices as well. For example, in the case of a hurricane or a flood where I lose access to certain parts of the network, so a link gets flooded, a bridge is washed out, having the right data tells me lots of things that are really important for managing that situation. It tells me what the immediate impacts are, who in a broad sense is using that facility, what's the functionality of it. It tells me something about what the network looks like and how I can reroute people around that. And there are numerous instances where knowing, for example, what the general pattern of freight flows is in the United States has been really helpful in cases where we lose a critical facility, a critical bridge over a major river, and we got to make real short-term decisions about how to do rerouting and who's going to be affected and whether, for example, you can move some product onto railroads for a short period of time while you're replacing the bridge. So having that kind of strategic image from a national data set is really important.
Who will fund the collection of this data? Is it got to be a government enterprise? Are there other entities that
might government fund? The government funds it largely now, and the government needs to continue to fund it. The increment of funding that we're recommending is very small, $6 to $10 million or something like that on an annual basis. But an awful lot of data is collected by the private sector, and one of the recommendations of the report is to find better ways to merge and combine and integrate the data from public sources and private sources so we know better what's going on. So for example, the trucking industry on a very comprehensive basis tracks its large over-the-road trucks using GPS, and the companies do it because they want to know where the vehicles are and whether they're productive or not. And knowing where they are means they can divert a vehicle. If there's a load somewhere 100 miles off the route, they can divert a vehicle to pick up that load. So there's a lot of data on flow characteristics on the intercity highway network that the trucking industry owns. Separate companies own that. The industry as a whole has been able to merge that data under an organization called the American Transportation Research Institute, which is a nonprofit research organization that's part of the trade association, the American Trucking Association. They aggregate the data, and they make it available in a very cautious way to the federal government, which uses it to monitor the performance of the highway system, because you've got these little vehicles running up, big vehicles running up and down the roads and reporting their positions and therefore their speed and progress through the network. So that's a private sector source. Under the right circumstances, it can become available to the public sector for analysis and management decisions. The private sector is very concerned about not giving away proprietary information. So if you run a trucking company and I run one, I don't want you to know what my trucks are doing and you don't want me to know about your trucks. But they found a way to work with that to bring the data together so that everybody can look at the results, but nobody knows who we're reporting on. We're not releasing individual vehicle data. So that's a case where private sector is collecting data for its own good reasons, tremendously useful for public sector. And the trick is to lower the barriers and find a way to collaborate and cooperate so that the public sector gets the benefit of those data at no cost or fairly low cost. And in return, what does the private sector get? It gets a better managed transportation system because that information goes back to guide decision making about running the transportation system.
I imagine anytime you look at depth in a question like this, it raises new questions. Were there any questions? In other words, if you were going to do another committee, a next committee to look into this further, what would you be interested in?
I think the next step is not so much committee work, but it's solid research to answer the questions along the lines that you raised earlier, which is, how do I get people like you and people like me to answer questions about our travel so that we'll have the database to do that? So that's a question of lowering barriers. And that's going to be an ongoing question. If you look at what happened with the 2010 census, they spent a very large amount of money trying to increase the response rate to some reasonable level because they're suffering from the same problems of non-response, lack of response to a questionnaire, which is essentially mandatory. In the transportation field, the questions aren't mandatory. You don't have to answer that. So the problem is bigger, but we still need the data.
Is a person legally required to answer the census?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yes. The short form of the census, it's a constitutional requirement. So in fact, if you don't respond to the census, you are liable for penalty.
And the only other question I have is, throughout the interview, you've been calling it data, I think, and I was calling it data. Is there one that's correct?
Mine is always correct.
Thank you, Professor.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, and be interested to hear how the report is received and what kind of things you hear back as it disseminates out.
Thank you. It's always fun to talk with you.
Yeah, thanks.